From the Farm Credit Illinois building in Sherman, this is the Closing Market Report. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Matt Bennett will join us from Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds to take a look at the cash grain market, and then we'll hear from Mike Tuhill of Diversified Services. He's been traveling with some of the Farm Credit Outlook meetings and crop insurance discussions and taking up what agronomy has looked like in the last year for the growing season and his views of the 2018 growing season as well. We'll have that discussion with him right here on this edition of the Closing Market Report. Oh, and Matt and Dan will join us at 3 o'clock this afternoon when I record Commodity Week along with Steve Freed of ADM Investor Services and Elaine Cub of Mastering the Grain Markets. We'll post that to the website by about 5 o'clock this evening at willag.org. That's willag.org. You can hear it, of course, tomorrow right here on our program and on many of these radio stations over the weekend. Commodity Week, our weekly look at what's been happening at the commodity markets. But for this afternoon, the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world, comes to you from the Farm Credit Illinois building in Sherman. By the way, no updates of the settlement prices from the CME Group as I'm traveling today.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online, listen to us on demand at WILLAG.org. Dan Zwicker is here now. He's with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Hey, Dan, thanks so much. Let's jump right into this because today, like yesterday, beans are lower, although they're down. Oh, nearly 9 cents at the time we're recording here, just around 12:30 today. What is happening?
Well, they're down 9 cents, but they're well off their session lows. So we were down, 16, 17 cents for a while, and now at least climb back or gain back half of their loss. And for the time being, I don't know if one wants to be totally panicky about it. I mean, we did have a nice now that a lot of the technical indicators got into the overbought status. And I think what we're seeing here is just a correction that may to a period of consolidation here, maybe after the correction. But we need to probably work off the overbought technical condition a little bit, and then maybe regroup and then maybe try the upside. Beans basically retraced 65%, 70% of the decline that it had during the month of December, setting back a little bit. And right where the market's trading at right now, is actually above a 38% retracement level. It's actually closer to a 24% retracement level of the January. I think these are good areas for the market to maybe consolidate, and then we'll take another look at it next week, whether or not we'll be able to resume the upside. Fundamentally, I think this thing triggered to the downside was very disappointing weekly export sales number. It came in well under expectations. And I think many are already beginning to think that U.S. supply demand tables will show a downward adjustment in export demand and probably increase overall carryover supplies. Also, the weather is a little more favorable toward Argentina. I think there's some rain in there. Northern Brazil, I think, continues to have a lot of wet weather and harvest delay. The export sales number, very disappointing, and then probably a little improved weather kind of spark the decline here, what we're seeing here at midday.
And for corn, where do we stand in your opinion?
Well, corn's holding up real well. The fact that we were able to punch through that 360 level, which means that we're breaking out of sideways trending market that was basically a broad bad range between 340 and 360. Some might have called it maybe a little tighter than that. But we're since 360 level, we're holding pretty good. But a word of caution is the market is, like soybeans, very overbought, and it is very some kind of decline here. But I think both corn and soybeans remain cyclically in position and seasonally in position to strengthen, go through the winter and into the first part of the growing season. Now, the only question is how much and how quickly and how will it come about? It's not going to be a straight up move. There is in it. The only thing that really bothers me or is a concern is remembering many times of the past that I've watched markets when they rallied January and put in a late January high, and that is the case what we've done here. A lot of times the month of February is not a good month, that we spend time consolidating, and what I'm fearful of is it may be in position to box a lot of farmers into selling grain that they was hoping to maybe sell it at a little higher price, because we all know cash flow requirements, you know, they begin to increase starting December 1st, and they accelerate as we go on into the first part of March. So this market, if it would decide to set back here during February, then would put a lot of in a position where they may have to sell grain before March 1st toward the bottom end of the winter price range, which would be unfortunate. But, you know, for the month, we're starting out the year with a monthly reversal to the upside on both corn and soybeans. And that monthly reversal could very well turn into a quarterly reversal to the upside. We don't get any curveballs thrown at us on that last day of March, or the second to the last day of March on that March grain stocks and acreage report. As long as we don't get any, the market could very well end up with a quarterly reversal to the upside. And that would be very positive for seasonal advance, you know, a normal seasonal advance to the May, June timeframe. So I guess I'm still somewhat optimistic that can occur. I know fundamentally we have a big hurdle to overcome. We've got a lot of farmers that need to move that inventory. I guess that concerns me a little bit, but we do have a weaker dollar, and that did help out the corn exports. We had a big number today. We're still behind last year, and we're behind the pace that we need to attain to meet USDA's projections. But if we have a few of those 70 bushel type weekly sales, we can kind of close that gap in a hurry. And I think that dollar weakness could be a very big contributing factor to the export demand for corn. A little different because we're going to have a lot of competition from South America on soybeans.
Are you concerned at all that the president has said he'd prefer that the dollar strengthen at this point? And does that really work into the marketplace? And we do have a brand new chair of the Fed.
Well, the only way they'll get the dollar to strengthen is they need to stop printing it and then start raising interest rates. And I'm having a president that's a real estate man that loves low interest rates is, I don't know how much he wants the dollar to strengthen, but I'm not higher interest rates, because it would definitely slow down or choke off the improvement in the economy that we're starting to see now. We got, for those of us that remember the 70s and 80s, if you raise interest rates an eighth of a point a month, we got a long ways to go before we get back to any kind of interest levels that would probably be real dangerous to the economy. But yeah, the economy has grown accustomed to very cheap interest rates over the past 15 years. And I know some people will 4% or 5% as high interest rates, but Todd, you and I both know probably our first automobile loan, when we got out of college, we were paying 7 or 8% interest on that auto loan. We got a long ways to go, I think, before we get into any kind of dangerous situation. But I think the dollar is going to continue to weaken. And that's what's the advantage of these cryptocurrencies and the blockchain development or technology is that gives competition to the dollar. It gives competition to the euro. So I think the cryptocurrencies are going to try to make the politicians a little more, or let's say the central banks are going to hold their feet to the fire by not getting too carried away with their monetary policies.
Hey, Dan, thanks so much. We'll talk with you again next week. That, of course, is Dan Zwicker. He's with Zwicker Consulting from Waco, Texas. Well, again, we're traveling today at the Farm Credit Illinois meeting in Sherman. That's near Springfield. Mike Tuhill is with us. This is probably a name, if you are in the agricultural industry in the state of Illinois, that you've seen on Twitter, in your email, maybe you see a newsletter from him. Things get passed around a lot. He's an agronomist, hails from Bloomington, Illinois, and works with Diversified Services. He's been talking to the folks out on these farm credit meetings periodically about last season, how it worked, and what his expectations are for the coming season as it relates to agronomy and putting a crop in the ground or harvesting it. Hey, Mike, thanks so much for being with us. Tell me about last year and how it is that maybe we missed this crop as we were coming through the summer months and then ended up with a really good yield for both corn and soybeans.
Yeah, Todd, I guess looking back at the 17 crop, got a pretty decent start early, and then we had all that record replant throughout the state of Illinois, especially in eastern and southern Illinois. Then we had some heat in June, had a really dry conditions up through about July 20th. Then we started to get some cooler temperatures, and kind of the reason why I miss this crop so badly, I was figuring a pretty normal divisional factor in this corn, maybe a divide by 85 or 90 kernels. And with the very cool conditions, it started about the 20th day of July in through Labor Day. We had 6 weeks of very cool conditions, and this corn was able to jump down into that subsoil moisture and produced a much bigger, heavier kernel than I anticipated. So again, really surprised on the corn crop. And also on the bean crop, we always talk about needing August rains, and for the most part, Illinois had a very dry August, but those beans were also able to go down there and grab some of that subsoil moisture. And with the cooler temperatures, also had a lot of sunshine, lack of disease pressure. And again, I think that's a reason why I, along with almost everybody except the government, kind of missed this Illinois crop, how big it was, considering what conditions were this summer.
Yeah, so speaking of the government, the USDA's weekly crop progress reports were a little bit deceiving. While the government was on all season long with their numbers for the size of this crop, and they were using the weekly crop progress reports, they didn't look, especially in the state of Illinois, as good as maybe as, well, we ended up at a 201 bushel crop average for the state, as you might have thought them to be. Still, we ended up with that big crop.
Yeah, again, they just cut them the benefit of the doubt, too. There's a lot of agronomists like myself with years of experience, and we missed it, too. I think, you know, looking at the corn, the ears were small, kernels were small, but during that whole month of August, we had all that sunshine and extended grain field period, and those kernels got bigger and bigger. So even some of that corn that I was riding the combine with, 220 bushel corn, wasn't impressive ear, but it was very impressive kernel depth and, again, very big, heavy, dense kernels.
And some kudos here. I was at Purdue's Agronomy Day, the 8th day of September, hosting an event, talking with Chris Hurt. And during that particular event, he told the farmers in attendance that he thought that the next USDA report could raise the crop size and that he didn't think it would go as high as what he was expecting, which was 174 at that point. And he was basing that off some models and the way he put those USDA weekly crop progress reports together. Now, let's look forward into the 2018 growing season. What concerns do you have today?
Todd, I've just got a couple concerns. I guess throw my economics hat on here. I'm really worried about these burdensome supplies on both corn and soybeans, so we'll kind of put that off to the side. My biggest concern agronomically is lack of moisture, especially here where I'm at in Sangamon County here today. Most of west central Illinois is under moderate drought status. We've also got some severe drought just north of St. Louis. So you know it's early. We're a long way from needing the moisture. But right now, a big concern I have is moisture. But on the flip side, we've had a very good winter for growing crops next year. We've had a lot of freeze-thaw, deeper freezes, and that's really important in southern Illinois on some of those more tired soils. So again, I think it's been good that we've had a nice amount of freezing and thawing. I'm really not anticipating a lot of insect pressure for next year. I think most of our fall ammonia on the better soils in Illinois are in pretty good shape. So, and looking at just out my windows driving around Illinois, soils have kind of got that sugar look to them. So it looks like to me chance for early planting, get some water next year. Could be another crop, unfortunately. Again, good for yields, bad for prices.
What should producers be thinking about for the early planting season? What kinds of things in the back of their mind as it relates to putting the seed in the ground?
I think growers are doing a really good job with getting that corn in early, Todd. Most growers around the state, depending on where you're at, will be thinking maybe April 10th to maybe the 20th, 25th up in the north. But as I've been talking to growers more during the meeting circuit the last couple years, more and more growers are trying to maybe buy that second planter if they only have one so they can have the manpower and the equipment to plant corn and beans at the same time. I know it doesn't work in everybody's farms, but it seemed like the guys who are growing those really high bean yields on the rotated acreages are getting those beans in early to mid-April to try to take advantage of a longer and extended growing peas season to catch more sunshine, set more pods, and fill more pods.
Any difference between the conventional and no-till folks on this end?
You know, Todd, I think I'm seeing more and more stalks worked around Illinois, so maybe more farmers are maybe kind of going away from strictly no-till, and maybe they're going out in the fall with vertical tillage to kind of size up that residue and make it warmer. So again, with some of these seed treatments, it may be harder to get the nice seed bed at no-till, but for the most part, I think no-till can work if we have a nice dry season where we can get those beans in early and get them off and growing and at least have the opportunity to capture some higher yields.
Speaking of seed treatments, the earlier you go in the year, do you believe the more likely you need to use a seed treatment for soybean?
You know, Todd, I'm kind of a lower population guy. I only like around 140,000, so I'm pretty well a seed treatment guy, you know, whether I'm planting beans on April 10th or May 10th or potentially even June 10th. So I'm just a big believer I'm going to plant less seeds per acre. I want to make sure every seed has the opportunity to grow into a nice, healthy plant.
Yeah, and that lower number is something that Mr. Davis, who had worked as a soybean specialist at the University of Illinois for a while and then gone north and now works for BASF, had been talking about several years ago at this point in time, and that bear out with the U of I's figures. I'm also thinking about some of the weed pressures that might be out there and your experience with dicamba, water hemp, and then, of course, there's a great big cousin of it.
Oh, sure, Todd. I guess if we are going to work on lower populations, and it just makes sense. There's been a lot of talk this year about controlling the seeds, not the weeds. So we've got to have that residual program, multiple mode of action residual, layered residual. So if we're going to lower those populations, especially early planting where we could potentially lose 10, 15, 20,000 seeds per acre, it's critical that we have those residuals out there to have a very long season-long approach to controlling weeds.
Mike, thanks so much.
Thank you, Todd.
That, of course, is Mike Tuhill. He is with Diversified Services out of Bloomington, Illinois. Let's turn our attention to the cash grain market side of the situation at this point. We're joined by Matt Bennett. He's been at Consulting Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. Hey, first, tell me a little bit about the marketplace and whether farmers should have taken advantage or even still take advantage of some new crop sales, in your opinion?
Yeah, you know, the thing that I keep saying is, going into the January report, a lot of producers were really hoping they could get another shot at that $10 handle on November beans, and then we've had ample opportunities, and then you have a day like today, and the market's trading back off, and I think producers are kind of feeling handcuffed. As always, I mean, I'm just going to keep beating the drum. If you can make to be doing something. And so, you know, every producer that we looked at so far for 2018 on profitability scenarios make quite a bit of money over $10 November beans. And if that's the situation, I want 100% of my APH, which is still a pretty conservative sales total, in my opinion. Just simply sell it to the elevator, if nothing else. But I want to get some, get some coverage on there.
Wait, so you kind of dropped out on me. So I heard you wanted a percentage of APH, but didn't hear what that number was.
Yeah, I mean, I'm at least 25-30% on physical sales, but we've got a lot of producers significantly in the black that actually have sold 25-30% of physical bushels and then have option strategies, particularly puts and some put spreads on 100% of their bushels, over those, a total of basically all the way up to their APH, just because they want to lock in some of these price levels and then leave the upside open, of course, on several bushels. But it's a pretty good place. Anyways, you can make, a dollar a bushel at average production.
Anything to do for corn?
I think on corn, you just have to look at, take your last few years' yield history. 390 plus on these corn has actually been a really good price to have had some corn sold. How much corn do you want to sell? It's obviously going to depend upon your own specific needs and what it is. But we've got a lot of producers that have sold 25-30% of their new crop corn, at least protecting it. So there's been a lot more of just true hedges put in place there instead of selling it to the elevator, because, of course, your base 8 or 9 months out. But simply having something in place is probably a good idea if you're in the black. And we found a lot more producers feel a little more comfortable about their situation, whenever you're within a dime of $4, 25 cents away.
Matt Bennett is with Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds in Windsor, Illinois. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online at WILLAG.org. I'm Todd Gleason.